Have you ever wondered what it's like to witness a murder?
Forrest grabbed the knife and then just stabbed Johnny in one motion.
Or how it feels to be shot?
I was immediately hit by a barrage of bullets.
Or how you would react if your spouse hired someone to kill you?
And he was to put me in a grave with a bullet wound on my head.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a stalking victim.
Came back upstairs, and when I came back and turned the corner into my room, I saw him standing there.
You'll hear from a man who was kidnapped and tortured.
I would do anything, say anything, to simply get away.
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app, or at whatwasthatlike.com.
We're doing a video club. I'm Wendy. That's Beth. And then there's Minnie. And Marlene is joining us. Yay! I don't have my sound effect board. I would do an applause. And we're Fruit Loops. And we watched We Own This City, a documentary. No, it's not a documentary. It's a show, and it's on HBO, and it's based on the book by Baltimore Sun reporter. His name is Justin Featon. And they wrote, We Got a Monster. And that's what we watched last month. And we were like,
yeah,
let's check out the dramatization of all this nonsense going on in Baltimore. And I'm glad we did. The series chronicles the rise and fall of the Baltimore Police Department Gun Trace Task Force and the corruption and moral collapse that befell an American city in which the policies around drug prohibition and mass arrest were championed at the expense of actual police work and human beings. It was directed by Ronaldo Marcus Green, written by David Simon, and HBO has a companion podcast, which leads me to my next point.
Yeah,
a companion podcast.
Oh,
yeah. I listened to it when it first came out and then went back and revisited it. And it is hosted by Dee Watkins, and it's just called We Own the City, HBO official podcast or something like that. But it's really good. And most of the actors are from Baltimore.
Oh.
Baltimore has a whole economy since The Wire started of production and TV and movie production there. And so a lot of the crew, a lot of the actors are from Baltimore.
Oh, and a lot of them, I learned on that podcast, were like kids when The Wire was being filmed, and they were like hanging around the set, and they let them hang around the set, and they taught them things, and they went into the industry. It was really cool.
Yeah, it was really cool how full circle that all came. So I think since we basically know I just want this to be, I don't know if anybody disagrees with me. I'm not really good at making rules, but just takes and thoughts. What are your takes and thoughts?
This is such a good series.
I couldn't really agree more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And casted perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of our favorite cast. I loved John Bernthal.
Yeah.
He's so good. And he grew up in Washington, D.C., in a suburb of Maryland, not quite Baltimore. But, you know, he nailed
the
it.
Area. Yeah.
And I love John Bernthal, but he did such a good job of playing this
being an asshole.
I was like, for a second, I had to like shake my head like, oh, wait, he's acting. You don't have to hate John Bernthal personally.
No. Yeah, as a person, he seems pretty cool. But this character was a total asshole. Yeah.
Total asshole.
Although
it wasn't enough, honestly, to me. He was not enough of an asshole.
Well,
wait a minute.
So when they listening to that podcast again, they said they were trying to present a character who is complex, wasn't just, you know,
a monster.
I think they did a good job of that with all the police officers who ended up getting popped.
Yeah.
Is you saw kind of at the beginning, they wanted to be good police, but they were trained by bad
to
police.
Be bad, bad
and
police,
the yeah. and the cycle just continued.
It was systemic. That was the what I felt like they pointed out was that the whole thing was systemic.
Yeah,
yeah. Speaking of the cast, the lady who it's Succession night. I hope everybody enjoys their evening this watching the season finale of Succession. I'm excited, but Carolina is a character on Succession, and that same actress was in this show. I don't know her name, but she played detective FBI Lady Jensen.
Was
Lady
she the flautist?
FBI, yes. Okay. Yes. And so that actress was talking about in that podcast how she was sort of drawn to this story and talked about she immigrated from Poland to the United States when she was a child. And her relationship with police was really fascinating to me as she's a white immigrant, but back in Poland, her grandfather was beaten to death by the police.
Oh my God.
Her father, the police in Poland came and raided her house, took her father out, put him in jail for a year. So she's always been afraid of police. And she was like, you know, I'm never going to pretend to be like a black person in the United States and have and what that might be like. But she totally understood not trusting police and law enforcement. And I just thought that was really, really like a neat tidbit to know about her as an actress. Yeah. Who else? Oh, the lady, the black lady who was the DOJ attorney.
Nicole.
Nicole.
Yeah. She's fantastic.
Love her. She was in Lovecraft Country. And I will just say, as a plus size woman, I am often disappointed by how they dress plus size women in TV shows. But her looks and outfits were so I was just like, where can I get an outfit like that? Like when she goes to Goodwill to donate that, I want it to for myself. She looked, her outfits were just so, they dressed her so well, like classy and in some parts kind of sexy, like when her arms were showing and some of those office-y outfits. And I just really enjoyed that.
Something else interesting about her is she's English, or she's originally from Nigeria, but lived in the UK, and she has an English accent.
What else did any other thoughts about the cast?
Well, there, when you were mentioning The Wire earlier, the guy that played Sean Suter, he was actually in The Wire as a kid.
No.
He was like a young gangbanger type kid in The Wire.
Yeah. Ooh, we'll talk about that Sean Suter in a minute. But I didn't know that. I've seen two episodes.
I had
of
to
the
look
Wire.
Him up because I kept seeing his face. I'm like, I know him from something. What do I know him from? And I looked it up. I'm like, oh my God, he was that kid in The Wire.
Wow. So, and The Wire was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they talked about it as kind of like a reunion. Because there were a lot of people who worked on The Wire that worked on this project.
They brought a lot of people back, which I, again, really enjoyed. And understanding that there is a whole economy of creators who can make a living making film and TV in the city of Baltimore is really like exciting to know, right?
Yeah, I think that's can go so there. Cool.
You don't have to go all the way to Hollywood or New York or whatever. You can, you know, give back to your city by telling these amazing stories. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
Who
Marlene,
else?
You got any thoughts?
I was Wayne Jenkins. His hair though just got
he ought to be ashamed of himself because he was so confident, like as an individual, and like thought he was the hottest shit, like going to the strip clubs, throwing all these women money. Like if you have a haircut like that, the answer is no.
Then that beard at the end.
Yeah.
It's like a Amish beard.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. His beard, the beard department could use some work, I will say.
I also thought Herschel was kind of a bigger asshole right
oh,
there.
Oh, yeah. He was disgusting.
Yeah. And was that guy in disgusting. The, in oh, the yeah. Wire?
No, he was in Dead Poets Society. I had to look him up, too. He was another one. I was like, I know him as a person. What was he in? Yeah. I mean, he's been in a ton of stuff.
Maybe he was in The Wire.
I don't know. But I knew him from Dead Poets Society.
Got it. Yeah.
My captain. Oh,
that's Robin Williams, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Rest in peace. So one thing that I noticed is the intro. I watched it on every episode.
Oh, intro, yeah. I love the intro.
It was good.
Yeah. The music all the real images from Baltimore really like was just another chef's kiss element that really like drove home the point that this is a Baltimore story. This is real. And I was checking out on Reddit because some people thought this was fiction.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they were like blown away when they realized this really happened.
Yeah. So I was curious about that too, because I don't remember when it happened. I don't remember reading about it. And, you know, I'm usually on top of the news. And they made a point in the podcast that this all broke during the Trump administration.
Yeah.
We were distracted by every fucking day. Stuff.
So that must be why I missed it.
There was a lot going on at that time.
There was.
You know, one of my thoughts that I jotted down was the parallels between Trump and Jenkins. How brazen they both were.
And just like, you're above the law.
Above the law, completely
motivated by greed. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And narcissism. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 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 What else? Oh, this was interesting. I learned this from the HBO podcast about the show, about that Frederick Douglass lived in Baltimore.
Yeah.
And it turns out, and the intro made me connected this in my brain, Baltimore has a really rich history that I hadn't even considered about music, jazz, that trumpet that's playing during the intro is really rad. There is Thurgood Marshall is from Baltimore. Billie Holiday is from Baltimore. Montel Williams is from there. Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Oh, I forgot about Montel Williams.
Yeah. And then the late Lance Riddick, who was in The Wire, is also from from Baltimore. So rest in power to that man who didn't die that long ago. And then what's my next thought? Oh, just how powerful police are. But then they want everybody else to follow the law. They don't have to do it, which is so
fucked up.
Wild.
Yeah.
And I don't know how anybody else feels about police abolition after watching this, but I'm more convinced than ever.
Yeah. I can see how people would think it's fiction because it is so
bizarre.
Hard to believe.
My friend and I, we binged it and finished the last one today earlier. Mm-hmm. And then, it was just so, it's astonishing, really. I'm like, what? This actually happened?
Yeah. Going in people's houses, hunting people for their money and their drugs, and people lost lives. Like that scene, I didn't appreciate this in the documentary, but had a real appreciation for what happened to that man. They stole $10,000 from him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He owed it to a drug dealer, and they killed him on his front steps in front of his little girl.
Right.
And then that family who that man was talking about, he just cashed his check, was taking pizza home to his family.
Mm-hmm.
They affected people's livelihoods, people's abilities to get jobs. Like it really, the ripple effects are infinite.
Yeah, I thought they did a really good job showing that how it affected all these people. There was the one interview they were doing with one of the cops, and they were talking about the guy, I forget what his name was, Devon, the one they stole $10,000 from and was killed. They asked him about that, and he was like, we just took money, didn't hurt anybody. And they're like, no, he died because you took that money. And the look on his face was priceless. Yeah because he didn't realize it, or
it was a dramatization they were telling themselves in order to be okay with continuing to do it, you've got to tell yourself this story in order to be able to do it, and I don't know if they did I don't know if they did a good enough job at really saying that they were I don't know how to say this. They weren't all drug dealers, that they were stealing from.
Yeah.
And even if they were stealing from drug dealers, this is just not how you go about police work,
Yeah.
And I think in some ways they didn't make it clear enough that a lot of the people weren't even doing anything wrong. They didn't make it clear enough that they were planting guns on people and then arresting them for that, and planting drugs on people and then arresting them for that, and then using that as an excuse to take their money. So I don't think they did a good enough job of making that clear, you know, like they were just... They were just going nuts on anybody in the city.
They were like cowboys.
People who were vulnerable, you know, and people who were just trying to make ends meet, and then having everything taken from them by the cops, basically.
They're definitely milking the clock.
Oh my God.
And it was also to get their stats up too.
Which is why the theory of police doing good work perpetuates itself. Look at all the guns they're getting off the street. Look at all the drugs they're getting off the street. We got to give these people more money. Defund the police. No way. Look at how good their numbers are. And it becomes a numbers game when it should be a people and community game. Abolish the police.
It's basically creating crime in order to create stats.
Point, Marlene. Yeah.
That's what it says too. It said, I had written this down. It said, in the city of 620,000, BPD cops reported over 300,000 pedestrian stops in the last 5 years.
Oh my God.
And less than 4% resulted in a citation/arrest.
Oh my God.
Wow. That's... out of 300,000 pedestrian stops.
That is insane.
They're terrorizing people. The entire city.
Just people, you know? People. Because I think if you spin it that, oh, well, this is only happening to drug dealers, then people can kind of like, oh, well, that's okay then. It's okay if they're, you know, not doing the right thing. At least they're stopping drug dealers, you know? Like, but that's not what
they were
doing.
That's not what they were doing.
You know, they were creating crimes in order to, you know, steal.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, I will shout from the top of the mountains that I think police and prison should be abolished. But this whole system that sort of came from colonialism, from the theft of people's land and life and liberty for, you know, America to be formed, right? Mm-hmm. Police were really just policing indigenous bodies and Black bodies. Yeah. And that now it's evolved to what we have now. And I think it's really disgusting. I think it's vile. It's a system, right? That was created by people. And I think that that is a hopeful thought, because it could also be a system that is improved or dismantled by people if we have the will to do so. So I'll get off my soapbox now.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
All right, so let's talk about batteries, specifically social batteries. Okay. Now, during the winter, you know, like my battery was like really drained and I really just couldn't wait for it to be over. And now that winter is gone, I am feeling more energized socially. So I can manage having friends over at my house and going out to do things. But I have to do a lot of mental preparing.
Yeah.
And then I also have to have time to recover from the people and the things.
Oh, yeah. I get that. And I know there are people out there who are energized and even thrive on being around people.
Yeah.
But I am definitely not one of those people.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. The thing is, you know, sometimes our batteries can get drained when we say yes to all the things and to all the people. And we forget to, you know, set boundaries and set aside time and space for ourselves.
Everyone's different.
Right.
And the good news is that therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah.
I definitely had many sessions with my therapist about boundaries and positive coping skills. And therapy is, dare I say, empowering.
Yeah.
And it can help you become the
bestest version of yourself and can help you determine when your battery is beyond depleted or needs a refresher.
Yeah. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/fruit today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp.com/fruit.
Hi, I'm Matt Harris. Seton Tucker and I host the podcast Impact of Influence, which for 2 years covered in depth Alec Murdoch, who was eventually convicted in 2023 of murdering his wife Maggie and son Paul. That story continues to evolve, and we will cover that. Plus, we will tell you stories of other true crime events that have happened in the South. Please join us on Impact of Influence. And give us a follow on the Impact of Influence Facebook page.
So what you were saying actually triggered something today we went to the Fort Edmonton Park, and they have this new Indigenous People's Experience exhibit there. And it's really good. So if anybody's in the Edmonton area, you should definitely go to the Fort Edmonton Park and check out the new Indigenous People's Experience exhibit, because it kind of Fort Edmonton Park tells the story of settlement from the perspective of the white person. Mm-hmm. And so this one is sort of trying to also add, okay, well, this is from the perspective of the Indigenous peoples, what happened to them from their experience. And then one of the little placards on there was mentioning that people often talk about the Blackfoot and the Cree fighting with each other. But mm-hmm. the truth is that they did not fight with each other until the Europeans came and took just about everything, because then there were limited resources. And then they began to fight because there were resources that they were, you know, they fighting over
crumbs. Yeah,
right.
They got us out here fighting for crumbs. Yeah.
Yes.
And that's white supremacy.
And and there's so many ways that it is perpetuated, you know, and it's still that, you know, there's this ongoing theme, I think, in some of our recent talks of the divide and conquer kind of, you mm-hmm. know, so it's like keep people distracted by this, and then they don't pay attention to the really bad that's happening up above, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. Wonderful. I don't know where I was going with that point.
But I like it. shout out the name of that place again. What's the called?
Oh, yeah. So it's the Indigenous People's Experience exhibit at the Fort Edmonton Park. So if you're in the Edmonton area, stop by and check it out.
Right on. Yeah. I had a thought that what they showed us was going on in Baltimore was, I mean, it was so wide and so deep, but this is not the only police department here on this continent that is doing this kind of thing. Yeah.
Maybe worse or not as bad, but it's got to be happening.
a lot of places. I'm thinking of the LA County Sheriff and that nonsense that's going on over there and their gangs brownie points for murdering people. Yeah.
Yeah. What do they call that gang?
Well, there's many. There's dozens of LA County Sheriff's gangs, and they are white supremacists.
Wait, this sounds like the death squads that you're talking about in Brazil.
Exactly. Uh-huh.
Yep.
Exactly.
And they have tattoos identify
Wait, and
them.
Is this sanctioned by the, or they, are they?
They're not doing anything about it.
They're not doing anything about it.
They're
right.
just it's, turning the other cheek.
Mm-hmm. But there's a new LA County Sheriff now.
Turning a blind eye.
Yes. There's a new LA County Sheriff now. He is trying to fix the problem. And several LA County Sheriffs are being subpoenaed to testify about their involvement in LA County Sheriff gang activities and crimes and extrajudicial killings. They're saying that having to testify is a violation of their civil rights. So there's some sort of weird fight that they're trying to put on to prevent having to answer for their actions. But this is something I'm following. So I'll have more updates very shortly. Okay. But the LA County Sheriff's gangs have been a big problem since basically the 60s. And communities of color have been sounding the alarm for the whole time. But it's only thanks to really, really good journalism is coming to light. So,
thank God for good journalism.
It still exists.
I think there was one particular gang that I became aware of, but I don't remember what they were called.
Well, I don't know. They have really scary sounding names.
The jelly beans was like the sharks or something.
They're really like, oh, that doesn't sound good. It's a bad taste in your mouth. What was I going to say?
That would be my gang.
Yeah. The gummy sharks.
Yeah. The gummy sharks.
The kitties. Rep your set, Bev.
Warm fuzzy kittens.
Yeah. So it was 6 episodes. And remember when we were watching the documentary, we talked about Donnie Stepp, not Johnny Depp, the bail bondsman.
Yeah. The bail bondsman. Yeah.
Yeah. He was played by sort of a more like grotesque kind of.
Yeah. I have to admit, I didn't figure out that that's who he was supposed to be until like the 6th episode.
Really look like the guy who was featured in the documentary.
And they didn't explain well, like who he was. He just kept showing up at his house. And I thought he was like one of his supervisors. And I was like, it was very confusing to me. Mm-hmm. I thought it was the guy was supposed to be one of his supervisors from the police department. And then he was like going over to his house for advice or something, you know, and,
this story was so complex that it was difficult to keep track of.
It could have used a couple more episodes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They could have extended it just maybe 2 or 3 more episodes, and then things maybe have been a little bit more clear.
But I think there was a lot of characters.
Yep.
And it was hard to keep track of all of them and who they were and what their role was and what they were doing. It was difficult. A lot of the, like, I knew who the main characters were, but a lot of the side characters, I never really figured out who they were.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if some of them were actually made up characters that were meant to just sort of represent a sort of type.
So Nicole, she was not a real character.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. Okay. I was like,
I was wondering
if she was supposed to be sort of representing Ivan in this story.
But she was an effective character in the story forward and getting us to see... Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She was used as sort of like the viewer, like she's figuring things out, she's sorting things out, and so you're along with her for the ride. She's the only one that I know of that was made up. All the other ones I think were real people.
Okay Let's see. The overtime thing, I can't remember if it was Marlene who brought it up, but when they were talking about how their overtime paychecks were basically double what they made. I was like, wow.
And they weren't actually working overtime.
Right.
Who can do that?
I didn't really understand how they did that.
They're just fudging the paperwork.
Mm-hmm. But, and then there was a conversation in one of the scenes at the end with the mayor, and they're trying to talk about like the budget. And the commissioner was like, well, we're going to have to cut somewhere. And she was like, well, you're not taking away from the kids, not my babies. But it makes total sense. I mean, this money has to go somewhere, this taxpayer money, right? So if they're fucking up and fudging their overtime, what does that do for the schools,
robbing
social
the taxpayers
problems?
And,
pension and retirement funds. I mean, everybody is harmed by
this.
So
they were robbing everybody.
Seriously. What?
Yeah, they were.
The whole settlements
city
that they had to pay out for.
Oh, yeah.
For
millions of dollars.
Yeah. Speaking of millions of dollars, you know that guy who got the 80-year-old man who got killed in that crash, which comes back over and over again throughout the series. One of the men who got popped for the planted drugs did get like $8 million from the city of Baltimore.
Oh.
And he left Baltimore because everybody knew he got this money, and they were fitting to rob him. So he left Baltimore, and he was in the car with his fiance, and he had PTSD from this whole situation.
Yeah.
He was getting real paranoid, and he shot his partner. because he thought she was stealing from him. So I think that he went to jail maybe for a little bit. I don't know if he's still there, but, you know, again, just that's another, you can't get away from the ripples. They're so vast. Yeah. I wanted to just say, I don't know if anybody noticed Wayne Jenkins' drink preferences, but what a bitch.
Yeah.
So Mike's lemonade.
He should go to jail for that. wine coolers, sir. Yeah. Oh my God, I was embarrassed for him.
Was he actually ordering a wine cooler? I thought he was doing that ironically.
I didn't think so because it came up more than once in the show.
I only noticed it the one time, and I thought he was like making fun of somebody by ordering a wine cooler, but he was actually ordering.
Ordering a wine cooler.
Those things are terrible.
I know. Like, can I just have a headache instead, please? Thank you.
Yeah, it's going to give you one anyway.
Like, that's what I used to drink when I was 17. I mean, 21. When I started drinking.
Garcon, do you have the Zimas back there?
Some strawberry fields.
Boone's Strawberry Farms. or Strawberry Hill, whatever it was.
Yeah, whatever it was. Yeah.
What else? Oh, so they got into the uprisings after the murder of Freddie Gray in the paddy wagon, right? Freddie Gray saw the police and was scared. I don't know why police are so baffled by people running away from them being afraid, because a lot of times they will kill you. So Freddie Gray runs away. They put him in the car and give him a rough ride. The city erupts. No justice, no peace. And they had actual footage from Maybelline Mosley. Is that her name? Mosley. Anyway, she was the state's attorney. They were like, the police were like, they're not being nice to us. and were basically like against the citizens for being upset at them for fucking this up so royally.
Yeah.
The actors were provided a therapist on the set because of these really challenging scenes, which are really not that old, and happening.
Some of them had experienced it when it happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the therapist was available to anybody who needed it when they were shooting these really, really difficult scenes. I thought that was so cool.
Yeah.
So
one thing when you're talking about the uprising and then afterward, the police basically saying, well, we don't like being criticized for how we do our job, so now we're not going to do our job. Mm-hmm. And at one point they referred to the resultant slowdown. And I did not like that choice of words, because to me, the resultant slowdown of the police, to me, that implies that the uprising caused this slowdown of work. Mm-hmm. And in reality, it was a choice.
Yeah.
You know, how many of us, when we're working, if somebody tells us we need to do a better job, how many of us are allowed to go, oh, you don't like how I'm doing my job? Well, I'm just not going to do it. And you're going to have to pay me anyway. You know, it's like, how many of us can do that? Right?
Yeah. I'm waiting for anybody to tell anybody if that is okay to do. I'm done waiting. Nobody said a word.
So anyways, one of the results from that was Wayne Jenkins and his squad. They were still out there doing their thing, and they got a lot of praise for it.
Right.
So,
I thought that was really, I loved that scene, because there was the scene afterwards when Jenkins was sitting in like some cop break room with some other cops, and they were listening to Maybelline Mosley say, I've heard your pleas for no justice and no peace, and I'm going to charge these officers with, I think, manslaughter or murder. And then he was like, how could she do that? Yeah, he lost. Yeah. He was like, how dare she? We're just doing our jobs. The outrage was so like hilarious to me, because it was so unnecessary and unwarranted. But then it also spoke to how complicated, you know, Wayne Jenkins was. He really thought he was a good police officer.
Well, just like when one of the prosecutors said something about him being a dirty cop, he got so incensed.
Yeah.
And he was like, they're in a strip club and he's just going off about it. Mm-hmm. And his coworkers were just laughing. They're like, well, you kind of are.
Like,
And he's like, no, not like that.
Yeah. And, you know, at the last scenes in episode six, it's Wayne Jenkins is in like this police academy talking to all of the police officers who were involved, even the commissioner who was older than him and wouldn't have been in the academy at this time. So it was clearly a like vision. He was having a dream or something, a daydream. But he was like talking about how we're going to get all the drugs off the street. We're going to get all the guns off the street. We're going to do the right thing and good policing. And everybody's like, yeah. And he's like, yeah. And then he wakes up and he's in the prison yard.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what that scene was?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I thought they were doing like a flashback and like, this was how he like got people on board with what he was doing.
I can see that. I think I thought that at first, but yeah. I mean, when you watch it all the way through,
okay.
It's like, oh, yeah, he literally opens his eyes.
He's in the prison yard.
And it's so funny to me how Wade Jenkins really thinks he got railroaded and thinks he's completely innocent.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah.
He still does. Yeah. He thinks he's innocent.
His own lies. He was.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it is very Trump-like.
Thank you.
Yeah. Because it's kind of a half and half. Like I'm not sure if he actually believes it or if he is so obsessed with how he's perceived that it's very important to him to, you know, it's like from the Shakespeare, you know, methinks the lady doth protest too much, you know. I don't even know what that quote is from, but you know, people use it for this sort of situation where like he needs people to think that he believes that he is innocent. You know, so it's all about how other people perceive him.
Yeah.
I don't know why my avatar.
Your avatar is laughing.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
I'm so puzzled. Yes.
But anyway, yeah.
Your avatar has turned into Wayne Jenkins.
Okay, that one was appropriate.
Now that one was appropriate. Yes. For those of you listening at home, I chose to use an avatar instead of putting on a hat this time, and it's being weird.
It's possessed.
It's possessed. It's laughing when things aren't funny.
I enjoy it. I like it. Keep it up, Avatar.
All right, I'll keep it.
So I wanted to talk about the controversy about Sean Suter's death.
Oh
yeah.
Sean Suter was the officer present when that crash happened and that 80 something year old man died after the crash of a heart attack. And he ended up leaving that gun trace task force squad to get on the homicide. And I think he thought, you know, I'm out of there, scot-free, hands is clean, I don't got to worry about anything. That's all behind me until the feds come knocking on his door. And he was supposed to testify, I guess, later on that day or the next day. And there's a scene where he's driving around with his partner and he says, oh, I see a criminal over there. We got to go get him. And his partner's like, are you sure? Okay, dude, I'll just go with whatever you say. And they get out of the car and he's like, no, I think he went this way. He was wearing this and that. And his partner's like, I don't know what you're talking about, but I'll stand over here and get your back. And then he goes down an alley and you hear three gunshots and they find him with a gunshot wound to the head. This mystery assailant, nowhere to be found. And his partner didn't see what happened. He just heard it. And so the controversy is, did Sean Suter's unalive himself successfully or was it a murder? And it really is, you know, it depends on who you ask what the thoughts are. I don't know if you guys thought about it, if you have any take on it or what.
Well, I looked it up after, and it says that he was shot in the head at close range with his own service weapon, which was recovered under his body. So
how does that happen?
And it says that blood was found on the inside of Suter's shirt sleeve. Suter's DNA was found inside the barrel of his own Glock, and his death remains unsolved. Yeah, so I mean, it kind of does sound like suicide.
Nobody knows exactly what happened. The guy, I can't remember who it was on the podcast. He either directed or wrote the story. I don't remember who it was, but he believed that Souter unalived himself. And the footage, I guess there was a video footage of him behind that van. And he was looking anxious, and the things that they portrayed in the show, that actually happened. But they don't know what happened after he went down the alley. They just don't know. And I think the official police position is that he unalived himself, but the coroner ruled it a homicide. And they believe that he did it because
his family wouldn't have.
Yeah. If he, you know, so he wanted to make it look like a homicide, and they did get the benefits. So, but you know, nobody really knows for sure.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I was reading is that after he was found shot, then the police cordoned off and locked down the neighborhood where it happened for 6 days.
Wow.
Yeah. It says the area included 100 houses, a church, and 2 stores.
Holy shit.
Wow.
What they do for
one of their own.
One of their own, a citizen.
Yeah. Yep.
And so, and the officers were positioned around the area's perimeter, and they would stop residents asking them for identification and preventing them from entering their own homes without identification.
Holy shit.
Members of the community later sued the city for the lockdown, alleging that the city violated residents' constitutional rights.
Yeah.
And the Baltimore Police Department paid $96,000 to settle the suit.
Issued
a formal apology.
They're like bleeding money.
Yeah.
Because of the things that this police department does.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, in my mind, it seems so simple. We could make a decision today to start doing the right thing.
Yeah.
But I don't get politics that much, but there must be something going on behind the scenes in the room where it happens that we aren't privy to that makes it impossible. And it's frustrating. Like this is not what the citizens want, right?
No,
We want ours. And that's, we own the city. Police can't own the city. One person can't own a city, right? It's a city. It's a community. It's a democracy. Like, what? So the irony of that statement, I think, made the title so appropriate.
Yes. Yeah.
Whole case.
So when the scammer uses the hypnotic method of building rapport, then they create dysfunctional, delusional reality.
That's how a scam begins. Convincing the mark that it makes perfect sense to hand over their money to a con artist. The Scams and Cons podcast tells you how scams are run. You'll hear how people are convinced to buy fake art, buy machines that print money, or steal your house.
I get a phone call from my wife, and she let me know that they had decided to move all our stuff out. I could no longer do anything about it except go through an eviction.
And you'll hear it from the experts, people who run the cons.
So we go to your bank, you go in and get $6,000 cash, give us each $3,000, we give you this. Uh-huh. You go home, and what you find out is cut up newspaper.
It's fun to know how the trick is done, and that's what Scams and Cons is all about. Listen at scamsandcons.com. or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Hi, I'm Sean McCabe.
And I'm Carrie McCabe.
We are, well, married, obviously, but we're also obsessed with the darker side of things.
True crime stories, alien abductions, poltergeists. If it leaves you scratching your head and keeping those lights on at night, we want to hear about it.
That's why we host the podcast, Ain't It Scary, with Sean and Carrie.
Every week, we bring our listeners a true story guaranteed to send chills down your spine, from history's most brutal serial killers to the mystery of spontaneous human combustion.
Yep, lots of these stories leave unanswered questions behind, and you'll get to poke through the rubble of the evidence with a hardened skeptic and
someone whose mind is more open to fun.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
You can find Ain't It Scary with Sean and Carrie wherever you get your podcasts, and on social media at Ain't It Scary. Come play with us.
Hey, I wanted to talk about, there were some great monologues in this series. Let's see. There's the Jenkins monologue when he says, "We own this city," after he got given the gun trace task force. Then there's the Jenkins speech when he, after he takes his plea and he's getting his sentence, he's you know, got tears and he's so ashamed and he's a family man. Yeah. I was like, blah, blah, blah. Enjoy them 25 joints. And my, how the tables have turned. You hate to see it. Actually, and by hate to see it, I mean, I love to see it. Yeah. the DOJ lady speech about growing up in her neighborhood, in a wealthy white neighborhood, and how she turned out okay, but she talked about the abuse her brother suffered at the hands of the police. And I thought that was a really, like, it really got me, that speech. And then the commissioner's speech at the end, when he was talking about accountability and he had all these plans to, no more plainclothes police officers. We're not going to count, you know, beans anymore. We're going to, it's quality over quantity. And he admits that they should have known that there was all this corruption going on. And then he got fired. And then
needed somebody to pin everything on so that they could make people feel like they were doing something.
Yeah. Make people feel like they were doing something. That's that's right. And so they get this new commissioner who went to jail. He was not a good person either.
Nope.
He went to jail too. Yes, for tax stuff.
I thought that was pretty funny.
Not my babies. Yeah. Guess who's going to jail tonight? And then there was the war on drugs speech that the DOJ lady. Yes, the DOJ lady was listening to this former police officer who's a teacher at the academy or something. I can't remember his name or if he, I'm not even sure if he was a real person or not, but he talked about, we lost the war on drugs and everybody knows it. And who's going to say it and then do something? I was like, whoa, get the, everybody on this show needs an Emmy and an Academy Award, a Tony, everything. And then there was that scene where Jenkins was speaking to the recruits. And if only all the words he had said it were true, right? You know, and then let's see. His drink choices were trash. The outfits. So I talked about the DOJ lady who's a full-figured woman who they dressed beautifully. The Ravens paraphernalia was everywhere. If you were like, I wonder what city does this show take place in? Like, you forgot what We on the City was about. Just look at somebody's hat or t-shirt because they love the Baltimore Ravens. And the
Orioles too.
Yes. I mean, I don't know anybody from Baltimore except for the affirmative murder guys, but people from Baltimore really love Baltimore. And I think that's cool. Pride for your city. The corruption part is not great, but
no, not so good.
I totally get loving your city. And then there was this one scene where one of the police officers, who I think it was
He was one of the
dark skinned black men.
Yeah.
But he gets out of his car and he's wearing like this silk purple shirt. Did anybody see this? Was anybody else like, what am I looking at? It was the early 2000s. I guess maybe that was a thing at that point. I don't know. But that was not a wonderful costume choice. But and it's like if the buttons were like unbuttoned in the
I did notice that one. Yeah. He's a good looking actor, but and that's what made the shirt stand out.
Yeah.
It's like,
why did they do him like that? What happened? And then the last thing, there were some scenes from the documentary that we just heard people talking about and describing, but we actually got to see like it kind of in real time. Like the attorney Bates, he was that light-skinned attorney who was heavily featured in the documentary that we watched, We Got a Monster. And he was talking about in the documentary how Wayne Jenkins was in trial. We see him on the stand and they're talking about how smart Wayne Jenkins was. But he must have said something that triggered Jenkins, and Jenkins stopped him in the hallway after that hearing. And I remember in the documentary, the light-skinned, handsome attorney talking about that exchange, but we actually got to see it. And I was like really excited to actually see it play out. It was a good scene. And that's it for my thoughts. What else do you, what else is there? We got about 10 minutes left. What do y'all think?
Yeah, I liked the monologue about the war on drugs.
The
whole thing was so, still is so stupid. But the concept that in a war, you need warriors. And in a war, you know, you've got one side versus the other. So that's when it really started this division. Mm-hmm. Of one side versus the other, calling it a war, you know. Mm-hmm. And another thing I was thinking about when we went to Fort Edmonton today, because it goes over the history of Edmonton, but they had a sign from the Prohibition era or the pre-Prohibition mm-hmm. era when they were talking about the ills of alcohol. And they didn't have Prohibition in Canada, but they did. US. Yes. Yes. So that actually caused crime, you know, like making something that people are gonna do mm-hmm. illegal mm-hmm. creates crime. Mm-hmm. And they created bootleggers who would go back and forth between Canada and the US, getting alcohol from Canada and bringing it into the US and people making money that way. And so that's essentially did the same thing. You know, this you make you really start to go after drugs or you make certain things illegal. It creates crime.
Yeah.
And it's like
and then
this,
you need more police.
Yeah. Stupid machine. Stupid machine.
And crime is completely subjective. Like, I mean,
So
alcohol was illegal in the United States. Right. And now it's huge.
It was a huge crime back then, you know? Yeah. And now it's like you could just, as long as you're of the appropriate age, you can go to the store and buy it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, so, but if we made it illegal again, we could create all kinds of new criminals.
You know? And the economy of crime is so disgusting. I hate it here. Mm-hmm. So you have the police who are enforcing the crime and then locking people up. Then you have the prosecutors and the DA who get paid to build these cases against citizens. Then you get them put into incarcerated buildings, sometimes owned by the state, sometimes owned by private corporations who make money off these beds and cells being filled by citizens and human beings for profit. Mm-hmm. And so
it's just a money-making machine.
Oh,
it's terrible.
Gross. Yeah.
It's like, how do we back this up? We just need to get rid of a lot of these laws. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we need some
Republicans
laws,
are not going to be.
But I know. Sure. I know. It's just
all
like.
Up on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
I mean, one thing I thought of when watching the Freddie Gray uprisings in the show is, I mean, there were people breaking other people's property, right?
Yeah.
Smashing windows of cars that weren't theirs and mm-hmm. burning buildings down. And I understand the anger behind that. But then what do we do? What could we do with all this anger to mm-hmm. effectively create change? Like, I would have liked to know after these uprisings, who's on the ballot? What elections are coming up? Where can we go to vote for these people? Whose policies are hurting us? Whose policies are helping us? Like, if we saw that on the news, or if there was a website that we could go to easily have access to the information that would help us, like, organize and strategize. Sometimes it's demonstrations and uprisings. But what do we do after that? That was where I was thinking about that a lot in this mm-hmm. past couple of days after watching this. Like, what do we do? And I'm just waiting for somebody to tell me. I'm happy to help. I'm just like, what do I do? So, yeah. But this was really, really good. I might even watch it again. Yeah.
I think I need to watch it again because I think the fact that I had watched the documentary first and I already knew what happened, mm-hmm. what started me focusing more on evaluating whether or not they were doing a good job of retelling the story instead mm-hmm. of letting it tell me the story that they wanted to tell me. And it wasn't until the last two episodes where I really let it go and let them tell me the story they were trying to tell me instead of, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think I need to watch it again with a new set of eyes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, with some of the things that you guys have said, and maybe I would get something.
I listened to the podcast too.
It's really helpful. Like it had me going, oh, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It just made it more, I'll listen to a podcast about anything, but especially a TV show. Yeah.
Any thoughts, Marlene?
Yeah.
I wrote, I thought Wayne Jenkins' Descent from Grace was pretty sad too. Like, he had a shitty trainer, or what would they call it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What mentor. Who are they called? Mentor?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we were talking about that, how it trickles down. Like, you teach someone bad habits and they're going to teach someone bad habits. And because it looked like he was trying to, how they all are, how they're so gung-ho and trying to be a good cop fresh out of the academy. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, "Nah, F all that. This is Baltimore."
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I wonder about that sometimes, that, because I've mentioned before, I dated a police officer for a while, and he was fresh out of the academy, and he was, you know, I want to help people and all of that sort of thing. And I wonder sometimes, I wonder if he's still got that mindset, or if they managed to drag him down.
Spoiled.
Jaded. Yeah.
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 Yeah. But I think it can't be an easy job. And I think that, kind of similar to, like, if you're a therapist and all you ever deal with all day long, like, there's actually a high suicide rate for psychiatrists.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. If all you see every day is people with really difficult problems, and struggling, and I think it starts to color your thoughts after a while. And so I think, you know, with police officers, if all they're focusing on is criminals, then they start seeing everybody as criminals, you know. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if there's something we can do to make the job less that, you know. I don't know. Uh-huh. Like. Yeah, because I mean, I agree that it's broken. The way that police work is done is broken. I do also think that we need somebody, you know, when people are out murdering people. Stop them from
We need Olivia Benson.
Yeah. We need somebody out there.
Yeah. Oh, Bobby, bring Bobby Gorin back.
Yeah.
That's the best one.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, how do we change this? Yeah.
I think that I'm glad. I mean, by now there's a bunch of Baltimore police properties, right? There's The Wire. There's We Own the City. Mm-hmm. We got a monster. And with every piece of content about this stuff, people are having conversations about it, like we're doing now. And so I think that's a great start, right? I don't know what the answer is. I just know what we're doing now ain't working. Yeah. But I think it's a big problem.
More conversations. So
more conversations. It's going to take a lot of ideas. It's going to take trial and error. You know, maybe the first things we try out suck. But we just keep trying to make it better. I mean,
yeah,
I think that's what it's all about. Otherwise, I really don't want to be here anymore.
May I be excused?
May I be excused? Yeah. So, yeah, I'm glad we watched it. Thank you, Marlene.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
All right, y'all. Yeah. So this has been Fruit Loops Video Club. Whew, that was good. I'm Wendy. That's Beth. That's Minnie. And Marlene is joining us. And this is for our Patreons. And we're so grateful for all of you. Look alive, y'all. It's crazy out there.
It sure is.
Especially in Baltimore.
Baltimore. Shit. Baltimore.
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 We are gathered here today to give you permission to plan the wedding that you want.
I'm Jessica Bishop.
And I'm Sari Wienerman.
And we're the hosts of the Bouquet Toss podcast.
Today's couples have to juggle so many things, from family expectations to outdated traditions and what's currently trending.
So to make it easier, we're going deep to figure out why we do weddings the way that we do, so you can decide what to keep and what to toss from your wedding day plans.
You are cordially invited to subscribe to the Bouquet Toss wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcast.com.
By the power vested in us, we pronounce you free to plan your day your way.
My name is Bill Huffman, and I am a former Cleveland news producer, and I am now the host of the podcast Who Killed? I began the show focusing on the unsolved murder of Amy Mihaljevic, and now each week I explore a different case with a focus on some of the victims who don't get the attention they deserve. I have a deep catalog of over 225 episodes, so there is a guarantee there will be something for you. Who Killed is an Evergreen Podcast, Killer Podcasts, and Slow Burn Media production. Subscribe today wherever you get your favorite shows.